Hello and welcome to the podcast, What We Teach Our Children. I'm Kim Clyden. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent and empowered children? And they say it takes a village, or what we might call today a community. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded though by people who can support us, your family, friends and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. This podcast is about everyone who plays a role in that story at every level of society. In last week's episode, Principal Karen Argus spoke about the role of integrating a kitchen garden in their primary school. Teaching children life skills in planning, growing, harvesting, preparing and cooking has proven flow-on effects for them and the community. Even activating curiosity in the natural world and links to food systems crucial for survival. Curiosity is a vital component for critical thinking, and the connection between nutrient density in our food and the health of the soil it grows is widely researched. Soil is also a key source of microorganisms that are important for our gut health. These microorganisms can help regulate health, hormones, mood, and memory. Today's guest Simon Matson's curiosity led him to an in-depth study of soil health, something he's practiced on his sugarcane farm and now shares with others as a soil health consultant. Simon, it's great to see you in the studio.
Thank you, Kim. I really enjoy your interviews.
Your story really intrigued me from the beginning because when I first met you, you were a Nuffield scholar and you were about to embark on a trip across the world, but you also were implementing some pretty unusual things in a cane farm. What is your background in relation to farming?
Well, grew up on a farm. My mother and father had their own small cattle place in central Queensland, and then we moved to a larger property in the early 1970s in western Queensland. And so always grew up in agriculture, and my father's certainly had the same upbringing. So agriculture's always been a thing for me and always been inquisitive as well.
How did that inquisitiveness play out as you took over farming responsibilities?
Oh, I could step back one step from there. So I got married and Sue, my wife, we started having children, and our youngest daughter, Sophie, had issues with all sorts of different things in her early years. So between the ages of about 3 and 5, Susie had Sophie to a number of different health professionals trying to sort out what the issues were, and eventually took her to a naturopath, and that naturopath then tested our bloods, like all four of us, because we got a son as well, and from that determined that Sophie was suffering from allergic reaction to a lot of the additives and preservatives and such that were in food. And that largely was the catalyst for me to then join dots between that and soil health in the fact that soil health must influence the health of the food that we're eating, the various aspects of that. So that's really where my interest in soil health really started, because it all of a sudden came to that realization that food is created from the soil. So if the soil's unhealthy, then wouldn't the food be unhealthy? And as it turns out, that's exactly correct. So that was the catalyst for me, and to begin that journey of asking the questions of what can I then do to try and improve my soil, to try and improve the crops that I was growing.
For sugarcane, most people say it's just a grass. What does it actually need? What did you have to look at in your soil?
So the conventional approach to agriculture in the 21st century is very much about applying fertilizer. So basically revolving around relatively simple chemical analysis of soil and, okay, these elements are lacking, so thereby you need to apply these elements at X number of kilos per hectare to provide the nutrition. So that's the basis of it. And the weed problem is approached in a similar fashion sort of thing, whereby you have a weed and then there are a raft of different chemicals that are registered for use against particular weeds. So then you need to use these chemicals at X number of litres per hectare or kilos per hectare to achieve a result, so to speak. So it's fairly basic, and as it turns out, there's a lot of similarities between the way that we treat our soil and the way that the medical profession operates in the fact that a lot of it is a one-size-fits-all sort of thing. Like, you've got these symptoms, so here's this pill or this potion, you know, and because of your size, you need to take it in this volume, so to speak, to solve your problem, so to speak.
So fertilizers are predominantly NPK, yes?
Yes.
So just explain to in a layman's terms what the fertilizer's role is in growing a crop.
Well, we all need nutrients. However, those nutrients are all around us in various forms. Like, we have, in the modern world, learnt how to extract and or manufacture all of the major and minor elements that are deemed at this point in time necessary for the production of whatever crop it may be. So nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus are the short list of the kings, if you will. However, it's one of the things that's always just flabbergasted me since I realised this nutrition is all around us anyway. For instance, the air. And the air we breathe is 78% nitrogen. So how come our plants are nitrogen deficient? And that's the problem. So not all plants can do it, and plants don't actually do it. Most of it's done by biology in a whole raft of different forms that we're still learning a lot about. Mostly, you know, most of us know about legumes and rhizobacteria that live in nodules on the roots of legumes. However, there are a whole raft of other biology that can extract nitrogen from the air and help make it available to plants. So it's a whole process, a natural process that happens naturally. And it must have, when you think about it, because plants have been on this planet for tens of millions of years, and us humans have only come along with a bag of fertilizer in the last 75 or so. So there must have been a process there predating us.
I found the story of fertilizer itself quite interesting, having some leftover elements from bomb making, am I to understand, after World War II?
Mm.
And they decided that, hey, these are some things that farmers could use. So then, since then, are we now depleting those resources?
So nitrogen we can extract from the air, but when it comes to basically pretty much all of the other elements, they're mined out of the ground. So yes, essentially they could all run out at some point in time in the conventional approach. However, a lot of those elements are tied up in our soils, and because plants don't use all of the element that is in the soil at any one time, they can be recycled. So if you can approach agriculture from a more of a natural process, so the processes that happened before we came along with a bag of fertilizer, essentially the elements that live in our soil, such as potassium and phosphorus, as a couple of examples, with the right approach to agriculture, and we could essentially recycle those elements forever and never have to apply them again. But it's biological function that enables that, and if you don't help the biology, it's quite easy to actually kill that biology. So, yeah, it's for me, that realization that agriculture is very much a three-legged stool. You've got the elements, and you've got the structure of the soil, and then you've got biology. And if any one of those three legs falls over, then the whole system falls over. So, yeah, conventional agriculture is very much focused on the elements and the structure of the soil, how it's put together. And we know a lot about that, but we're still learning the biological side of it. but it's the biological side is just as important as the other two. So how can I as a farmer support that biological function? And that was, you know, the basis of my journey and the realization that biology has been supported by plants. Plants and biology go together, and plants are supported not only by the soil, but then by the power of the sun. It's a cycle, and most things revolve on cycles. So for nitrogen, we spoke of briefly, nitrogen in its stable form is a gas in the air, and then through biological function in association with plants, it can be extracted from the air and become plant available. But the moment the plant takes it up, then that nitrogen is being used by the plant, but it's also wanting to get back to its gaseous form and return to the atmosphere. And as it turns out, carbon is largely the same. It's in a continuous cycle. It's very stable as a gas in the atmosphere, so carbon dioxide, which is now considered to be 0.04% of the atmosphere, as opposed to nitrogen, which is 78%, roughly. And that carbon is in a continuous cycle. So plants, with using the energy of the sun, can extract that carbon out of the air and use it to build not only the fibers of the leaves and their roots and whatever else, but they also use it then to feed the biology in the form of simple sugars. So all of that biology that lives in our soil can't see the sun because the sun would kill it, but it still needs to be fed by the plant using the power of the sun. So there's this continuous cycle for carbon, nitrogen, and water even is in a continuous cycle. So water vapor is a huge percentage of the air that we breathe, and it's on a continuous cycle as well. And so,
it sounds quite complex. I mean, if we needed to simplify this, and considering the situation that we're in currently with the elements that we have in the atmosphere, carbon and nitrogen and the ratios you just described, what do we need to teach our children that would matter moving forward about those natural processes you just described?
It's just connecting the dots for them simply, just the same as it was for me. Although it seems very complex, it's not. In the basic understanding of the connection of life, we are part of life. So I feel there's a disconnect in our modern world, particularly the modern first world, between ourselves and other creatures. We as humans have got to the point now where most of us don't even think of ourselves as an animal. But essentially, we are just another animal on this planet, and we are entirely linked to all of those cycles, those natural cycles, just like every other animal and every plant is. And we're entirely reliant upon that. So when you grow a plant, for instance, in a room with artificial light and no biological function, so hydroponics, for instance, I'm not saying that hydroponics is bad. It can produce a lot of food, but because it's disconnected, that food is entirely different in molecular makeup to the stuff that's actually grown as Mother Nature intended.
With sun and biological activity of the bacteria.
Yeah.
In explaining that, I suppose I have seen some systems in schools like the Stephanie Alexander program, for instance, where they introduce a kitchen garden to schools. Those children then plant and raise and care for those food plants. They harvest and then produce a meal for invited guests. I mean, is something like that something we should see at every school? How important is food to our future if we get it right?
It's vitally important. We need food at least three times a day, every day of our lives. Yeah, we need to drink a little bit more often than that, and we need to breathe a little bit more often than that. So we can't live without it for very long. So teaching our kids to cook is where to start. So you'll grab their interest immediately because you're creating something that they can eat, or helping them create something they can eat. And that's unfortunately, in my humble opinion, where the problem is rooted at the moment, is because we've got so much pre-processed food that takes so little preparation, and basically just pop it in a microwave and eat it, so to speak.
So there's another disconnect that we were talking about earlier in that whole process of feeding ourselves.
Yeah, but they don't even get to see that plant or animal
in its natural state.
In its natural state. So they've got no idea what it looked like to start with. It's just this thing that comes in a packet and you warm it up and eat it and it tastes good. In the conventional food processing world of today, it's very easy to make ingredients taste a certain way.
Just add sugar and salt.
Pretty much. That's a very big part of it. And there's a formula, a very well-known formula, and that's what all the fast food restaurants use. It's a very well-known formula. So they can make you want to eat their food just because it smells a certain way, pretty much. And most of those people that consume that sort of food don't even know what a lot of the ingredients may have looked like to start with.
I don't think you'd be able to identify half of them because most of them are numbers.
Yeah.
Mm. How can we take responsibility for some of the food we consume whilst engaging our children in growing?
Well, you're never going to be able to grow everything you need. And we shouldn't probably even try, because a lot of most plants are very seasonal. And this is another thing that supermarkets have enabled that shouldn't really be a thing, is the fact that you can buy just about any sort of fruit or vegetable. We've lost that seasonality, but we've also lost a lot of the flavour, because then a lot of those fruits and vegetables that come to us out of season have been in long-term cooled storage of some description.
Or have come from overseas.
Yeah. Have lost a lot of their flavour. So flavour is directly connected to mineral content. And not only mineral content, but even breaking it down further, it's all sorts of different substances, if you will, that are in plants besides just nutrients. There's all sorts of different other things that you get from plants that have been grown in soil that you won't get from manufactured food. So we can manufacture a lot of things, like fake meat, if you want to call it, all sorts of different meat that we can manufacture these days. It's not that we can't make stuff. We're pretty smart and can make stuff. But those manufactured goods, quite often, not only missing nutrients, but they're missing all of these other secondary metabolites, they're called, which is a whole raft of different things besides just the nutrients. So yeah, it's getting our kids engaged by teaching them how to cook stuff, and then taking it to the next step. So, you know, this stuff you just ate, what does it actually look like, where it came from, and what's the process then to grow that, and what's the process then to harvest and process it so it gets right through to the food that we eat.
I'd love to revisit this with you and maybe look at the way the nutritional aspect of our soils has been overlooked. I recently discovered that we don't have selenium in our soils in Australia, and I find that quite perplexing because I've been eating watermelon seeds my whole life thinking I was getting selenium. you know, it's important as a woman to have selenium. So let's explore that in another time. Simon, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today. It's been fabulous and I look forward to learning more.
Always my pleasure. Thanks, Kim.
That's soil health consultant Simon Matson providing a sneak peek into a realm teeming with life just under the surface of our soils. You can learn more about Simon's work and regenerative agriculture via the links in this episode description. Next time on What We Teach Our Children, imagine having a baby who meets all the milestones for the first 18 months, is happy and healthy, only to cease eye contact, become non-verbal, and regress once weaned from his mother's milk. Mandy Jeppesen shares her story about raising her sons diagnosed with autism, Asperger's, and ADHD. Her courage and resilience is inspiring, but it's her unconditional love that will warm your heart. Like what you're listening to? Don't keep it a secret. Tell everyone you know about it. I vowed decades ago that I would change the world one story at a time. The only way we can do that is by sharing the stories we love with those we love. This podcast is recorded at Launchpad Studios thanks to Split Spaces, a nest for new ideas.